Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving. So we have three lectures left today and tomorrow. We have a review in HSW 303 on Thursday, this Thursday, from 4 to 7. Okay, bring your questions, go over the content. So we're going to talk about hemopoietic conditions. These are very important. Of this, that's probably the most important you're going to see clinically is anemia. When we think of anemia, we have to think of two other organ systems that involve oxygen, and that is the cardiovascular, the conduits, the blood vessels, and the pump, the heart. The next organ system is the respiratory tract. Those two organ systems, in conjunction with the red blood cells, are critical to avoid what type of cell injury? Hypoxia. So when you think of this condition, you always think of what? Hypoxia. When we talk about anemia, it's hypoxia. No matter what the cause is, this is the most critical part you have to remember. If somebody has anemia and you're trying to do some physical therapy with them, don't be surprised they're going to be fatigable. So this is the critical part. We're going to use some examples, common anemias that you'll come across that patients have, and think of how you evaluate the patient who has anemia. So it's decreased red blood cell mass that becomes critical. And when that decreased red blood cell mass, it translates clinically into hypoxic injury, the H word. And that's going to be all over the exam, obviously, next week when we do the final. So we talk about the red blood cell. These are the bone marrow. We're going to talk about white blood cell disorders later in the next hour as well as tomorrow. And we call those hemopoietic malignancies involving the white blood cells. This is going to be the most common disorder involved the red blood cells. You can see they come from the myeloid series, the red blood cell at the bottom in the middle, versus the lymphoid cells giving rise to T and B cells and natural killer cells. And that's the lineage we're going to talk about, and they go through this lineage in order to become a red blood cell. If we look at a normal bone marrow, here we see a variety of hemopoietic cells. We see red blood cells in the background. We see a lot of nucleated cells. So there's a normal ratio of myeloid to erythroid precursors, roughly 3 to 4 to 1 ratio in your bone marrow. In other words, more white cells than red blood cells. Why do you think that's the case? Is because they have a shorter lifespan than a red blood cell. A red blood cell has a lifespan of roughly 120 days. So therefore, you don't need as many compared to the white blood cells, where neutrophils live how long in the blood? Only 10 hours. So that myeloid to erythroid ratio becomes very important in maintaining a constant balance between white and red blood cells. When I think of Krispy Kreme donuts, I think of red blood cells because that's what they look like. If you look on a scanning electron micrograph, this is very important. They're about 7 microns in diameter. So anemia is defined as decreased total circulating red blood cell mass, and that becomes most important. The most common cell in our blood is a red blood cell, and it makes important sense because it's got to carry out the delivery of oxygen to various tissues, and so to avoid hypoxic injury. There are various laboratory values that one uses to assess people clinically in terms of the amount of volume of red blood cells they have. One is called the hematocrit. This is a relative number because it's a percentage, the volume of red blood cells per volume of red blood cells and the serum, the liquid fluid, the liquid part of the blood. And normally in men and women, it varies, and even with children. So these are the normal range of a women. It's usually 36 to 42%, and men roughly 40 to 45%. One of the things you have to remember is these red blood cells, when you think of the volume, you can change it very easily by either drinking too much water or dehydrating yourself. If you drink too much water, the volume goes down because you're increasing the liquid portion. If I exercise and dehydrate, if I took my hematocrit before and after heavy duty exercise where I'm sweating a lot, your hematocrit would go up because you're losing fluid. So that's why this is a relative number. An absolute number you measure is the hemoglobin, the grams of hemoglobin, grams per deciliter. And so there's the rule of three. In other words, you can multiply or divide the hematocrit, the percentage, by 1/3, you get the hemoglobin. And so in women, the hemoglobin would be 12 to 14 grams per deciliter. In men, it would be roughly 13 to 15 grams per deciliter. The opposite is also true. If you multiply the hemoglobin by 3, you get the hematocrit. And so this becomes an important way to compare and contrast a relative number to an absolute number. This also becomes important when you get the hemoglobin, the relative degree of hypoxic problems. When you have patients who have mild anemia, which goes from the lower limit of the hemoglobin or hematocrit down to 10 grams per deciliter or 30% hematocrit, the patient tends to be asymptomatic. However, if the patient is very active, where their oxygen demand is increased, then they will have signs and symptoms of fatigability on exertion. If now the anemia is moderate, from 5 to 10 grams per deciliter, the patient will definitely have problems on exertion, shortness of breath, tachycardia, fatigability. When the hemoglobin is below 5, they can collapse at rest. And they'll be very pale looking because of the mucous membranes, highly vascularized. Skin, depending upon the pallor of your skin to begin with, will be a reflection of the degree of anemia. So the anemia will be reflected clinically, because what's the most important thing we're trying to avoid is hypoxia. This is all you have to remember, hypoxia. And so this becomes an important way to evaluate. When we look at other laboratory values, we look at very important is the mean corpuscle volume, or MCV. It's the fecal liters, and it's the average volume of one red blood cell. Okay? And that becomes important when we divide into three categories of anemia: normocytic anemia, microcytic, small red blood cells, or mega red blood cells. And that's what we're going to talk about most of the time. And so another important lab value is the mean corpuscle hemoglobin picograms per cell average mass. So these are picograms. Then you can also measure the mean corpuscle hemoglobin concentration grams per liter based on the average hemoglobin per red blood cell. And last but not least, because red blood cells in a population, like any type of measurement, has a bell-shaped curve and you have a standard deviation over the average. Normally, the bell-shaped curve in you and I is very tight. In other words, there's not much variation in terms of size, so that you have a small standard deviation. But when you have anemias that affect the amount of red blood cells, their size will now can vary greatly. And so the bell-shaped curve gets wider at the base. Therefore, the standard deviation becomes larger. So this is another value that people can use, is saying, are the red blood cells of normal size in a relatively tight range, or their variability, depending upon the severity of what's causing the anemia based on the RDW or standard deviation. Another laboratory is, like we talk about, the body is either adapt or die. So when you have cells that are required to replace the cells that are being lost outside, like hemorrhage, there are cells, normally immature cells, called reticulocytes that are traveling. These are immature red blood cells that are basically enucleated before they leave the bone marrow. And they have a bluish cytoplasmic hue to them, and it's because they still have ribosomal RNA as they're going through the last part of translation that's occurring within the cytosol of a red blood cell. So what happens is, normally in you and I, 1 to 1.5% of our red blood cell mass have immature. Remember we talked about bands, the immature for neutrophils? So the same thing is going to occur with red blood cells. And so when you have a problem of loss of blood cells occurring outside the bone marrow, where they're being lost because of hemorrhage, or you have antibodies destroying the red blood cells, whatever the cause is, or hemolysis, then the bone marrow will respond like an infection, will respond with increased bands or mature, so will the bone marrow with immature red blood cells to get out there to avoid hypoxic injury. If the reticulocyte count is low, it means the problem is where? Within the bone marrow. The bone marrow cannot make enough red blood cells to meet the physiologic demands of hypoxia, or oxygen content in tissue. So this is another way to tell whether or not the problem is inside or outside the bone marrow by looking at the percentage of immature red blood cells. So it's basically when it's high, it means there's hyperplasia of the bone marrow. When it's low, it means there's a hypoplasia, decreased proliferation of red blood cells. There are four characteristics that we look at this donut pathology is the size. And the size can vary. This is a term that's used, anacytosis. It's a generic term. It doesn't give you specificity to the type of anemia. It's unequal. Or the shape, abnormal shape or pocleocytosis, variation in shape, and then we compare it to size, anacytosis. These are a variety of terms that we'll see as we go through the anemia. Spherocytes is the term, instead of being a donut, it means that you've lost volume and cell surface area and becomes a sphere, just as the term implies. Target cells, you think of target store. You have a dark center versus a light outer layer and then a darker layer, and that you think of target stores, and we'll talk about what causes that in a moment. Acanthosis, large thickened red blood cells. Schistocytes, we talked about this in hemodynamic derangements. We talked about DIC causing physical abuse to the red blood cells, chopping it into small pieces, bite cells. The one cell that likes to eat red blood cells, has a fetish for red blood cells, is the macrophage. That's who takes care of your old red blood cells in the spleen, for example. Or when you have hemorrhage into tissue, whatever the disease process, who's there to eat the red blood cells? Macrophages. And so the fate of a red blood cell is held in the confines of the macrophage. So a bite cell we'll talk about is where a macrophage takes a bite out of the red blood cell because there's something abnormal about the fluidity or rigidity of the plasma membrane. We'll talk about that. Teardrop cells, just as the shape describes, a teardrop or dacrocyte means that there's something wrong with the bone marrow, and one of the things that can happen to the bone marrow is scarring or fibrosis. And so when you have a lot of myelo, meaning marrow, fibrosis, it can lead to a teardrop cells. Sickle cells, we'll talk about sickle cell disease. How many people have gone through sickle cell in college? Okay, some have not. We'll go through and look at what causes the cell now, instead of being a donut shape, to become a sickling process and causes vaso-occlusion. You'll also hear the term clinically rouleau formation, and it refers to the red blood cells lining up like poker chips, stack of chips on a peripheral blood smear, and it's because of the amount of protein, because the proteins have negative and positive charges. There are negative and positive charges on the surface of the red blood cell, and the red blood cell, because of this interaction, will try to hide its charge on the surface by lining up in single file when there's too much protein in the blood of a person. This could be to chronic reactive diseases where you have a lot of acute phase reactant proteins coming from the liver, for example. You can have disease like multiple myeloma, we'll talk about in the next hour, where you have plasma cells making too much light chains or proteins. So anything that increases proteins can lead to this rouleau formation. Then color, either you have not enough hemoglobin, it's hyperchromatic, normal, you have enough, or you have hyperchromatic, having too much. And the last is structure. You have inclusions or structures you look for in a peripheral blood smear to say there's something abnormal about the red blood cell. Basophilic stippling is clumping of RNA in various conditions. We'll talk about this in what are called thalassemias, decreased alpha or beta chains. Heinz bodies are basically oxidized hemoglobin in various conditions, and these become on the surface of the plasma membrane red blood cell, and the macrophage comes along in the spleen and takes a bite out of them. Hal-Jal bodies occurs when there's problems with DNA synthesis of the red blood cell. We'll talk about this in megaloblastic anemias, for example, and the Hal-Jal bodies are basically clumps of nuclear content. And then this is a common problem of anemia. As the term implies, sideroblasts are basically immature red blood cells that have mitochondria that have basically abnormal iron trapped in the mitochondrial red blood cell that's going to be around the nucleated red blood cell. And that can lead to a problem, obviously, of decreased red blood cell mass or anemia. So this one slide, before we get into the examples, describes all of anemias. So if you think of the red blood cell, it's a sac of what? Hemoglobin. And hemoglobin has four chains to them. They're a tetramer. Two are alpha and two are beta. In terms of our genetics, we have four alpha chains or alleles, and we have two beta chains or two beta alleles that are going to be important. We'll talk about conditions that affect that. So when you think of a microcytic anemia, it means something is abnormal with the hemoglobin molecule. That's how you think of microcytic. They break it down simply into what? What's the most important metal in the body? The most ubiquitous metal is iron. And as you know, that iron will bind in the heme or porphyrin ring of hemoglobin to the tetramer of alpha, two alpha and two beta chains to bind to oxygen delivered to tissue. So the most common cause that you're going to see clinically, or you may have experienced this, is iron deficiency anemia. When you don't have enough iron in the body, you cannot make enough hemoglobin. Therefore, you lead to hypoxic injury or consequences of the lack of ability to provide transport of oxygen to tissue. So the most common cause of small red blood cells you're going to ever see clinically is iron deficiency anemia. We'll go through that in a moment. When we talk about normocytic anemia, the problem is either inside or outside the bone marrow. Either you're losing red blood cells, consumed, hemorrhage, you give blood transfusions too often, you're menstruating heavily, if you're a reproductive female, any way of losing red blood cells or consuming them gives you a normocytic anemia, or something wrong with the bone marrow, you can't make enough red blood cells, drugs, toxins, viruses. The last, megaloblastic anemia or macrocytic anemia, is a problem of maturation of red blood cell where you're affecting DNA synthesis of not only these highly labile cells, but other labile cells throughout the human body. And it's going to be decrease the maturity time. It's going to decrease the number of red blood cells because the maturity takes longer to occur, and you end up getting bigger red blood cells, but less of them, leading to anemia. So let's go through these three categories with various examples. Anemia, textbooks on anemia are this thick, by the way. So we're just looking through some examples that you'll come across. These are just examples that are many out there. How many people have known people that have had anemia, no matter what? Look at, see? You'll see it out there clinically. Very good. So that when you see Krispy Kreme donuts, think of a red blood cell, because it's a problem if you don't have enough of them. So here's a diagram, a flow diagram, to help you think about how you evaluate someone with anemia. The biggest is size. So the MCV, we talked about fecal liters, and a normal range for a red blood cell in the human body is 80 to 100 fecal liters. And then it's less than 80, microcytic. If it's greater than 100, it's a macrocytic anemia. So we'll talk about various conditions that leads to a microcytic anemia, small red blood cells. Here you see the reticulocyte count telling you it's either inside or outside the bone marrow. If it's a low reticulocyte count, here are examples that you've destroyed or injured the bone marrow, can't make enough red blood cells. Or you make enough red blood cells and your high retic count, trying to get hyperplasia of the erythroid cells, but you've got other conditions that are destroying it or consuming them outside the bone marrow. And last but not least, these are conditions that affect the maturation of red blood cell, leading to less red blood cells but bigger red blood cells. These are called macrocytic anemias, and you think of DNA synthesis. So two important cofactors or vitamins that is important for DNA synthesis is folic acid or folate, as well as vitamin B12. So let's look at, we'll go through these three categories of anemias and look at some examples that are illustrative of the problem of decreased red blood cell mass. Any questions up to this point? Okay. So small red blood cells. So when I think of small red blood cells to the left here, I've got to think of what? Decreased red blood cell volume, because I can't make enough hemoglobin. And the way I think of it is looking at the molecule of hemoglobin and the components that make up the hemoglobin molecule. And if I have less of it, of one or more of these components, I lead to a small red blood cell or microcytic anemia, less than an MCV of 80 fecal liters. And the mean corpuscle volume obviously has to be decreased as a reflection of impaired hemoglobin synthesis. What is the most common cause you're going to see is iron deficiency. If we turn over 1 billion cells every hour, what part of the cell that has iron in it, in all our cells, is the mitochondria. Because the mitochondria has cytochrome C oxidase, which is a porphyrin ring that uses iron in order to generate the last step of oxidative phosphorylation to ATP. So if you're losing 1 billion cells and turning over, you're losing iron, unless you consume them, break it down, like in the gut, for example. But if it's on your skin, you're taking a bath, you're losing iron. Every time you take a bath and the skin comes off and it's sloughing off every hour, you're losing iron. So men can lead to iron deficiency anemia. Women can go, they not only lose that type of iron, but they also lose it in reproductive age during menstruation. So that's why when you have iron, you're constantly losing it all the time as a human being. One of the organ systems that you always have to think about, that's number one, that's a common source of chronic bleeding that can be occult or hidden, is the GI tract. Because we talked of the GI tract before we went to Thanksgiving holiday, and there are many things that can cause damaged GI tract. It's very long, it's highly vulnerable to injury, and you can lose blood and you won't know it, whether it's ulcers, whether it's gastroesophageal reflux disease, or if you have colitis, or if you have enteritis, if you have tumors, anything along the GI tract, this is the one you should always think about in men, obviously. In women, the leading cause of iron deficiency is reproductive age. That's number one you should always think about. But if she's postmenopausal or premenopausal or before menarche, perimenarche, you have to think of the GI tract as the first organ system. Other organ system highly vascularized is the respiratory tract. If they have chronic coughing, if they have chronic TB, and they have chronic injury to the highly vascularized tissue, you can lead to loss of blood. There's a disease called anemia of chronic disease, where our macrophage releases, in any chronic disease over years or decades, IL-1, and it causes the iron that's stored in macrophages of the bone marrow not to release the iron. So it's a utilization problem. So that too much IL-1 traps the iron within the body and you can't release it. It's like not having enough iron to begin with. So it's a utilization. So if you ever come across this condition, anemia of chronic disease, it involves macrophages that are impeding the ability to release endogenous stores of iron. Another important disorders that can affect hemoglobin is the synthesis of the porphyrin ring, where the iron is bound to attach to oxygen. And there are various types of situations where it can cause decreased heme synthesis, leading to small red blood cells. Drugs. The classic drug is INH. If you're on INH for tuberculosis for long periods of time, besides causing hepatic injury, it can also lead to decreased synthesis of porphyrin. Lead poisoning. Remember we talked about this environmental. It inhibits the heme synthesis. This can lead to a microcytic anemia. And then since there are multiple enzymatic pathway enzyme steps in porphyrin ring, you can have inborn errors of metabolism or defects in the enzyme pathway leading to decreased porphyrin ring synthesis. The last but not least is problems of hemoglobin synthesis, the alpha and beta chains. We call these thalassemias, and we'll talk about thalassemias in a moment. Thallo means C, literally, and it's decreased C. And what part of the world do you see these genetic conditions involving alpha and beta thalassemias? Is the Mediterranean Sea. Because over centuries of consanguineous marriages in that population around the Mediterranean Sea, the various countries and continents that surround it, this is where you have a high frequency of these conditions, genetic. Then there are other problems of hemoglobins, molecules that we call these hemoglobinopathies. So let's look at iron deficiency anemia. The most common we're going to see to lead to small red blood cells. Causes. What population that you're going to be working with is the elderly. This becomes very important that when you're on a fixed income, your ability to buy quality foods and a variety of foods can make a difference in terms of your iron intake, and you can lead to iron deficiency anemia. Increased demand. Who do you think of? Children and pregnant women, because they have increased their blood volume. They're basically providing oxygen for two. And so it becomes very important that their hemoglobin be looked at and make sure that there's nothing going to be a problem both for the mother and the unborn. Another important thing that you have to think of is iron is absorbed in the stomach and the duodenum. So if you have diseases like that destroy those areas of the place where iron is absorbed, it can be a problem, especially like people, hyperbaric surgery, where they were taking out parts of the stomach and leading to decreased weight, but they're also having problems of leading to iron deficiency and leading to iron deficiency anemia. Chronic blood loss, as I mentioned, women you think of, reproductive age is a very important question to ask. And then both men and women, GI tract is the number one you should think of. And then you go through a clinical assessment in terms of review a system of other sites like the lung, for example, is a common, or if they have chronic hemorrhage from urine due to tumors in the renal urinary tract system. So when we talk about iron deficiency anemia, what happens is a function of time. We have our iron stores in our bone marrow, in our macrophages in the spleen and liver. As the storage of iron decreases, like your bank account, you don't realize it until you get to a point where you need to cash in on those deposits. And so what happens is the amount of ferritin, which is the iron that's going to be in your serum, is decreased, as well as your bone marrow iron. And then the circulating iron, which is going to be the decreased serum iron itself. And then there's a protein that transfers your iron throughout the body, a transport protein called transferrin. And transferrin is a molecule made by hepatocytes that help regulate iron metabolism. And so when we think of each seat in this auditorium as a one molecule of transferrin, it is a binding site for one atom of iron. So if you looked in this room, you would have a total iron binding capacity would be increased, because if half of you left, we have more empty seats and less iron. So that's why it means increased total iron capacity of the concentration of the molecule transferrin, that you have not enough iron being occupied in order to be transported through the body, for example, the bone marrow, to make red blood cells. Then obviously you have more empty seats, it means it's less saturated sites on the transferrin molecule, therefore it's decreased saturation. And then eventually, what's going to happen to the amount of hemoglobin synthesis? It's decreased. What happens to the size of your red blood cells? They're now smaller, and you have less of them. Now you lead to what form of cell injury? Hypoxia. See, it's real simple. Really simple. Okay? Keep it simple. And then the MCV is going to be decreased, a reflection of size, and the amount of concentration, the mean corpus hemoglobin is decreased. And since you have a variation in size of the population, your standard deviation is increased, or as a reflection called the RDW, random distribution width, or standard deviation. So when we talk about iron metabolism, we take it in our diet in various sources, and we have to absorb it in the stomach and especially the duodenum. And it's got to be transported through that single layer of cells, and then now it's going to be carried by transferrin to the liver and to red blood, or to what are called reticular endothelial cells, like in the spleen and bone marrow, called the macrophages. And then you're going to make erythrocytes from the macrophages, and they circulate. So this becomes important to regulate. Now, having too much iron in the body, is that good? No, it is not. So you have to regulate iron. Iron is toxic to cells because it can generate free radicals. So the amount of iron you absorb in your diet has to be tightly controlled. So popping all the iron every day is not a good idea either. And the body tries to control the amount of iron you need exquisitely. And so there are conditions that are going to interfere with this ability. So when we go to the duodenum or the stomach, when iron is taken in your food, it is basically Fe3+. There's no transport system in the body, so it has to be reduced to Fe2+ by basically a molecule called duodenal cytochrome B. Then you have an important transport system called DMT1, you see on the slide in the green. And DMT means divalent metal transport 1. What cell controls this is the hepatocyte in your liver, because it's got to deal with the portal blood that's going to bring the iron to the liver and then give it transferrin to transport it, or it'll be bound to transferrin because it's circulating the blood. And it goes to the liver and other parts of the body, like the bone marrow. And so it makes a hormone, the hepatocyte, to control this transport system, what is called hepcidin. This hepcidin is a hormone that it will, when it goes up, will tell the duodenal cell to destroy that DMT to prevent too much iron from coming in. So the body constantly modulates how much iron you need. Because if you bring iron too much into the body, you'll overwhelm the cells and it can cause free radicals by having too much iron and cause damage or reactive oxygen species. So having too much iron is not good, and we call that hemochromatosis, condition of increased total body iron stores leading to tissue damage like cirrhosis, heart failure because it accumulates in hepatocytes and endocrine organs and destroying them. So when you have patients who have cirrhosis, that basically what happens is the cirrhosis will destroy the liver and its ability to synthesize molecules like hepcidin. And now in patients who have cirrhosis due to hepatitis B or C, well, it can increase iron uptake and cause hemosiderosis or increased total body iron stores. And if they live long enough, they could lead to hemochromatosis. Once iron is brought into the cell, it's got to be transported out as Fe32 plus in the basal layer. And then it's going to be converted back to Fe3 plus and transported by plasma transferrin to the rest of the body to distribute as a transport system. Okay. Any questions about this? Yes.
I'm sorry, you mentioned something about
like
too much iron, some sort of reaction that would destroy
tissues. We call that hemochromatosis. Condition of increased too much iron color. It'll be an old term for it is called bronze diabetes, because the iron gets deposited in your skin, goes to the pancreas and endocrine organ, as well as exocrine, destroy it, and causes heart failure. So it causes damage. Versus the term you ever hear, the term hemosiderosis, increased total body iron stores without damage, versus hemochromatosis. Okay. This is what a peripheral blood smear looks like on somebody who has iron deficiency anemia. And you can see there's a lot of pallor, a lot of white space in the center of the cells, and their variation in size. If you looked at them, you see there's small ones in various sizes. This is a microcytic anemia, and we talked about this. This is lead poisoning. In the center, you see basophilic stippling, and that's a reflection of the basically lead interfering with the porphyrin. And it also gives you increased pallor, less hemoglobin, and a microcytic anemia. But the most common cause of microcytic anemia is what? Iron deficiency. Which is the most common anemia you're going to see? Iron deficiency anemia. All right, just want to make sure. Leading to what form of cell injury? Hypoxia. See how easy that was? We're reviewing. Medicine is for straightforward. If you try just to memorize these facts, it causes diarrhea neuronally. And it gets a real problem. Now, anemia chronic disease, I mentioned to this is basically trapping of the hemoglobin in your macrophages, not releasing it. And basically what's going to happen is you have increased iron circulating, but decreased total iron binding capacity, because what's going to happen is the transferrin molecule that's made by the hepatocyte says we don't need any more iron, so the decreased total binding capacity will decrease. Causes any inflammatory disease that has macrophage elevated, leading to IL-1 and trapping the red blood cells in bone marrow macrophages. The last one of microcytic is thalassemia syndromes. Thallo means C, so decreased amount of either alpha or beta chains, and it's a problem of the hemoglobin chains themselves. If they're alpha thalassemia, it refers that you don't have enough alpha chains. So you have decreased red blood cells, you have more beta chains relative to the alpha. And the opposite is true for beta thalassemia, where you have basically less beta chains and more alpha chains. The alpha chains are very toxic to the red blood cell and causes hemolysis or lysis of the red blood cell. And how you make the diagnosis clinically is by doing electrophoresis, because they all make small red blood cells or target cells, and so you have to look at the amount of hemoglobin, whether it's the alpha or beta chains, based on their molecular weight sizes, which are different. Starting with the alpha chains, when you think of this is deletions. How many alleles or
do you have of the alpha chains are four alleles. So there must be what? Four conditions. Either alpha one, you're losing two, three, or four alpha chains. The silent carrier, you can live without one of the four without a problem. Now you start losing two alpha alleles. Now you only have two alpha alleles that are going to make, you don't have to memorize this, but it depends on what chromosome they're on, they're cis or trans. What becomes a problem is when you have three alpha chain deletion, now you have all beta chains, and what happens is you get what is called hemoglobin H. And this is unstable, and it causes the hemoglobin molecule to oxidize and become Heinz bodies. And these can be taken out by the red blood cell, by the macrophage giving you bite cells. And we'll talk about Heinz bodies being oxidized. So it means that the hemoglobin is unstable. Let's see. There was one other one. Whoops. It got lost on the slide. There's one when you have all four alpha chains are missing. And what happens in this case is, let's see, it may be because of the slide. Because I know it's on here. There it is. Why didn't it show it? That's interesting. No, it didn't want to show it. So we'll just do it here. You can see the last one on this slide, we'll show it this way, is what is called where all four alpha alleles, the genes, are deleted. This is incompatible with life because there are other hemoglobin chains that are made in utero, and they are going to be gamma chains. And this basically causes so much injury or causes instability to the red blood cell and the fetal red blood cells that they lyse, leading to swelling of the fetus or hydrops fetalis because of this. And so it's incompatible with life. Okay. The beta thalassemias are a problem of the hemoglobin since there's only two alleles for the beta chains. Basically, it's a problem of RNA splicing. You have exons and introns. The introns have to be, the exons have to be removed versus the introns. And so basically what happens is you lead to problems of translation and transcription. And so this is just a nomenclature. You don't have to memorize this for the exam. Or basically, if you have just some chains, it's beta plus. If you have no chains, it's beta zero. There are three basic types. Beta thalassemia minor means you have either beta plus or beta zero. Remember, you have two alleles for the beta chain. Beta intermediate could be beta plus and two beta pluses, or beta plus and beta zero. And then the worst to have is you have beta zero on both beta chains, and this is called major. Okay, and that's the one we'll talk about. So in this process, you have these basically genetic. This is not to be memorized. I show you the various problems of having the exons and the introns, and there's genetic mutations that occur to give you various types or degrees of beta thalassemia, and it's the introns that have to be removed, give the exons. So beta thalassemia major, this is the most important one. And basically what happens is you're going to have the red blood cell, because it has nothing but alpha chains, it causes the red blood cells to have a very short short lifespan. So it's a lot less than 120 days. And so they get this chronic hemolysis. So they need chronic blood transfusions to deal with the situation. The only problem is when you get a transfused red blood cell that's been sitting in a refrigerator after being taken from a donor, it has a shorter lifespan to begin with. So if you're chronically giving them short lifespan red blood cells, they're going to get chronic hemolysis from the transfusions, as well as the red blood cells that are being destroyed naturally because of the beta thalassemia and all these alpha chains hemolysis. They end up dying at the age of 17 on the average because of hemochromatosis, because of too much iron, that they have so much turnover of red blood cells, they accumulate too much iron in the body and can't get rid of it. So it leads to a microcytic or hyperchromatic anemia. And you get with these target cells, because you've changed the tetramer, the ratio of alpha to beta in either alpha or beta thalassemias, the ratio changes. It also now changes the shape of the red blood cell, reminding you that of a target. And you can have basophilic stippling based on, with or without it, based on whether or not there's RNA clumping out. And you have increased reticulocytes because all this hemolysis is taking place outside of the bone marrow. So this is a diagram taken from your textbook showing you a red blood cell that has nothing but alpha chains and somebody who has beta thalassemia. The bone marrow will respond by making less red blood cells, ineffective erythropoiesis or hematopoiesis. And what happens is you're going to lead to anemia that leads to hypoxic damage. This anoxia or hypoxic damage is going to now cause the kidneys to release what hormone that's important for red blood cells? Erythropoietin. The erythropoietin is now going to cause the red blood cells in the bone marrow to try to make more red blood cells that are genetically defective. And so what happens is you get so much hyperplasia, it makes your skull become thickened as a consequence. And because of the chronic hemolysis and transfusions, you lead to hemochromatosis and damaging too much iron overload, the heart, the liver, as well as endocrine organs as a function of time. So this is what they mean by target cells. Here you can see it's dark in the center, pallid on the outside, and dark on the very outside of red blood cell. And so this is what is, when you think of target stores, think of thalassemias. Normocytic anemias, this refers to the problem either inside or outside the bone marrow. Any questions about microcytic anemias? Okay. So the mean corpuscle volume is normal, but we have less red blood cells, so there's a problem. So we think of acute blood loss, that's obvious. Hemolytic anemias, where you have red blood cells that are made, are normal, but once they leave the bone marrow, they're circulating, they're being destroyed. They can be intravascular hemolysis, where you break the red blood cell, now you release hemoglobin. This hemoglobin goes up, but now it's got the only way it can get out of the body now is through the kidney. Now you start seeing hemoglobin in your urine, which is not normal, by the way. And the spleen is not involved because if it was an intact red blood cell being removed, it would be large spleens where you have more macrophages. So examples of this, we come back from break, is sickle cell anemia, for example, glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase deficiency, autoimmune hemolytic anemia. For example, we have antibodies attacking red blood cells and causing hemolysis. Extravascular hemolysis means that the macrophages in the spleen and or liver are removing the red blood cells because there's something abnormal about them. In this case, the most common one you'll probably see is called hereditary spherocytosis. And as they, in term hereditary, this is a genetic problem where cells like the red blood cell or human cells in general, we have cytoskeletal proteins that have anchor points to the plasma membrane, in this case the red blood cell, that are defective. And it makes the plasma membrane fluid. And pieces of the plasma membrane comes off as it's going through the circulation, and you're losing surface area as a function of time, and they become spherocytes. Now they're so small that they're looked by the macrophage of the spleen as saying, you know what, you're abnormal. You need to leave. And so it's being eaten completely or phagocytized by the macrophage. And so what happens in this case, the reticulocyte count will go up because the problem is whether it's intravascular hemolysis or extravascular hemolysis that or loss of red blood cells that you're going to have increased bone marrow hyperplasia erythroid cells to compensate for the loss. So here's an example as we go is sickle cell. So sickle cell is a problem where you think of the beta chains. On the sixth codon, there's the codon normally, and the sixth codon will translate into glutamic acid. But in sickle cell disease, the valine is substituted a neutral amino acid, and this changes now the hemoglobin beta chains. So what happens is you have hemoglobin S, that's the nomenclature. So when you put under acid conditions, in other words, let's say somebody who's exercising, you produce lactic acid, or somebody who is hypoventilating, decreased ventilation, retaining CO2, or there's hypoxia for example, in the tissues, that what happens is the hemoglobin S will start to polymerize with itself and causes these rods inside the red blood cell to make them stretch out and sickle. Well, now you make the red blood cell so rigid that when it gets in the capillaries, as you see in the very top, it can be anywhere in the body, that now it plugs it up. And so the biggest problem with sickle cell disease is vaso-occlusion. You're actually plugging up the blood vessels. Now, if you plug up the capillaries, what happens to blood flow? Decreases. What happens to the oxygen in the tissue? Decreases. So, and it further may, if that decreases, you have hypoxia. So more red blood cells are trying to get through, sickle further and further and more in this occlusion. So it becomes a real problem. So the problem, the morbidity and mortality associated with sickle cell disease is vaso-occlusion leading to hypoxic injury. And what triggers this, why would exercise increase the likelihood in somebody with sickle cell disease to have a sickle crisis of vaso-occlusion? Why would exercise be a problem with someone with sickle cell disease? Blood. You have increased blood flow, but what acid are you producing as you're breaking down glucose? Lactic acid, but that's now you have a metabolic acidosis that causes the hemoglobin S in those red blood cells to polymerize, and now you get sickle cells that now get trapped in the capillaries of the muscle or the places, and you get muscle cramping and pain, and it can be very severe and a problem. Well, what if happens if you have sickling in your heart? What would happen to the capillaries if you sickle in there? Get hypoxic injury, and it could lead to chest pain or angina pectoris as a consequence of this. Or if it was sickling in the capillaries in your brain, lead to hypoxic injury, leading to either a stroke or it could lead to confusion because of the lack of blood flow. So the problem with sickle cell disease is that you're causing in either an acid situation, metabolic or respiratory acidosis, or in the case of decreased oxygen in the tissue, it can lead to sickling. And what tells me this is sickle cell disease? Because I see the red blood cells doing what? Sickling. And that's what they look like. And you can imagine that those red blood cells get trapped in your capillaries, they plug them up and lead to hypoxic damage. And here you can see the sickle cells. And here's one right in the center. All right, on that note, we'll take a break, come back in about 6 minutes and continue on. Any questions? This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.